Accession number 14788, Reel 8.
Mr. Parker, Reel 8. We're talking about a period in Egypt, probably the last camp with Beni Youssef, before you went up the desert. Was there anything else you remember before you went up to Knightsbridge?
Well, the only one I did remember is that this bloke, Cheddar, had been down to Jericho, and he came back to us. And, of course, he got 3 months' pay due to him. So, also, we were struggling because we'd spent all our money. And he said, well, I've got a bottle too. So, we weren't very far from the Nafi, near the pyramids. And he said, we'll go up there and we'll have a bit of a round summer. And I remember the night before we went up the desert, we were all, you know, worse for wear. And when our money ran out, the bloke said, I don't know who it was, but he said, you know, at the back of the Nafi, he said, there's all these crates, and there's money on them. He said, if you take them back, you can get money on them. So we were pinching those, and going in the front bottom, putting them down as a deposit, and we got about another 2 days' beer out of the Nafi food. So they realised that we were pinching their crates to take them back.
What about the journey? On the journey up into the desert, you were split into more a sort of battery basis, and you were working with the tanks of 22nd Armoured Brigade. Now, would any of that affect you at your level? Or
not really, no.
Did you know anything about the new box system that was being
We heard about it. This
what
job
did you think of it all?
He got killed later on, didn't he?
The box system, you know, not the jock columns, the box system.
Well, you see, on paper, I mean, they talk about these things, but I mean, when you're actually amongst it, you don't really register. I mean, you have the tanks on the outside and the infantry and vice versa. But apparently, as you go up the desert, the people at the top, I mean, they know all this, but we don't. Not the.
So it didn't make much difference to you?
Not really, no.
Now, you were a signaller with A Troop.
Yeah.
Under the overall control of Langford, then?
Langford, yeah. Mm.
And what was your job at the time? Were you on the lines or the radios, or what were you doing at the time? Were they exchanges?
I think we were doing sort of 50-50. Not specific job, you know.
Now, you moved up into the desert. Is there anything about that journey before you got to the 27th of May when 520 Battery was attacked?
I don't know, no.
Now, on the date 520 Battery was attacked, what do you were with 425, which is near a Knightsbridge junction. What do you remember of that day? It's about 5-6 days before the big battle, but...
Well, the only thing I remember is that I was on the wireless at that particular time. And a message came through.
Which wireless? The command post wireless, or which one?
It would be on the, command post, yeah. The gun position.
The gun position,
yeah,
A-troop,
yeah.
Gun position.
Yeah.
And what message came through?
The message came through that we would better retire while we could. But apparently some part of the regiment did get away, but we never did.
Now, that sounds more like in June 5th, 6th, that does. Can you tell me the story as you remember it, then? What happened then? You got this message that you weren't to retire.
Yeah.
Who took that message? Who was it coming from? Because you wouldn't pick it up direct from division or...
Oh, no, no.
It'd be coming down from regimental headquarters, wouldn't
it? Well, say, it's hard to... go back all these years and exactly pinpoint. Some things you can pinpoint like that, but others you can't.
So tell me the story, as you remember it, of the battle then. That's probably the best way.
What, Knightsbridge? Prior to the battle, the information was that they were going to put a big barrage down, and they would obliterate the Germans. But apparently, they put this barrage down, and I remember that, because...
What do you remember of it?
Well, it was terrible. It was like thunder all night long. Boom, you know, boom, 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 boom. and the guns were that hard. I mean, I thought they melted. And the story came down the line that the Germans retreated, withdrawn. And the story was that before that they couldn't retreat because there was a minefield at the back of them. And apparently when we arrived at where the shells had fallen, there was no Germans at all. They'd all withdrawn. So we didn't clear them out. And of course that's when the battle started and we were in the soup.
What do you remember? How did the battle start for you? What were you doing?
Well, at that particular time, I think I was a part-time quartermaster, because we got vehicle cooking, and I had to, that's when I came across Jack Hatterall, because on the
he was the wagon line officer by then, wasn't he?
Well, he was doing rations as well, because I went down to the rations to pick him up, and he was in the wagon, and I said to him, I always remember this, because we knew a bit of Hindustan and a bit of Egypt and a bit of, and I said to him, is this sub cheese? And he said, what do you mean sub cheese? I said, well, is it the Kulu? I mean, that's Hindustani, see, Kulu.
What does that mean?
Is the lot. Is this a lot? Because he was giving me a ration. And I said, is this a sub cheese or this is a Kulu? And I said, how long have you been up in the bloody war? You know, I didn't know who it was. I thought it was one of the lads. And I was upon my day by then, you see, so. He said, who are you? I said, I'm Bomley Parker. He said, oh, he said, I'm Captain Hatwell. That was when Jack. I said, oh, I said, Jack. I said, I'm sorry, sir. Way apart. And when we got the rest, we came back and started dishing them out. And I said to one bloke in the slit train, I said, I was a bloke called Min. I think it was Peter Birkin's Batman. It might be in the book, I don't know. And then I said to him, get this brew on. I said, we're all waiting. And I looked at him, and the Germans had started using anti-personnel shells. And he was dead. The piece had gone straight through his neck. And when they go crunch like that, you sort of automatically go like that to sort of
crouch in.
Yeah. And it, with the curtain like that, piece had gone through there.
Back of his neck.
That was it. We're dead.
So this was actually on the 425 battery position.
Yeah.
And where had you gone back to get the food?
To the wagon lines, which is probably, you know, a mile and a half away.
So when had you started doing this quartermastering?
When we moved up to that area.
So you just started?
Yeah.
So you weren't signalling at all at the time?
No.
So what happened that you got there and you've seen Mint, what happened next? Were they firing a lot on them?
Well, they were throwing this stuff all the time. And it was terrifying. I mean, it went like crack all the time, you know, like thunder. But worse than thunder, real crack. And the pieces of metal, you know, sort of only about as big as that, and they were coming off the...
An inch square?
Yeah.
They were coming off where?
Well, right above you, because only 25 pound a shell used to land on the deck and then go. But these were bursting in the air.
Now, was this the 5th or the 6th? Was this the last day or the day before the last day?
No, I think the 5th. I would think the 5th.
So they were firing this airburst stuff, and you were pretty nervous.
Yeah.
So did you? I mean, what did you do with your vehicles?
Well, the vehicles were just in the area. I mean,
did you dig them in at all?
Oh no, we had a chance to dig them in.
Did you dig yourself in?
Myself, no.
So where did you take shelter?
Anywhere you could, sort of side of a wagon, say the wheel or something like that. I mean, I was never one for digging holes in the ground. I used to sleep on the deck. I mean, even when people used to go down.
Why was that?
Well, I have claustrophobia.
So So even a little a slit trench was a bit much for you.
Oh yeah.
So what happened next then? So lots of airbursts.
Airbursts, and of course these. In this, I've got a sort of map at home. In the cauldron, which they called it, it's like a basin, and we were in the sort of in the bottom of it. Eventually, all the tanks, the pinched three parts of our tanks, takes to where some other battle. I don't know what that's in there, but that's what happened with us.
They withdrew overnight, yeah. That'd that's be the right. Night of the 5th, 6th. Yeah, yeah. What happened to the rest of the 5th? Or were you just...
We just sat there while they bombed us and shelled us.
And were you doing anything yourself or just keeping your head down?
Just keep your head down.
Mm. Was there any job you could be doing?
Not really. I mean, you'd probably go and help out on the guns and, you know, take ammo and...
But they weren't. They hadn't. They didn't need that so desperately then, because I know they did later on.
Yeah.
Because when you mentioned Daniel.
Yeah.
But at this stage, you weren't required on the guns.
Oh no.
So you were just basically keeping your head down and letting things go by. What about that night then? What do you remember of that? Is that when you got the message that night, or was it earlier you got the message?
I think it must have been that night. Yeah.
So what were you doing on the radio then? Just helping out.
Just helping out. Yeah.
And what exactly message did you get that? That's the night of the 5th, 6th. You say the first message said
that we could get out if need be, which meant if we could withdraw, there was a space to get out.
So at that time you weren't surrounded.
No. But there was still like, as we thought, like an opening. Say we're surrounded there. There was an opening there. You could go out, like coming out of football match. There was one gate open. All the rest were closed. But the next day, the order came through that we must stay put and sort of fight the last man.
And you don't know who that order came from?
No.
Were you on the radio when it came through, or did you just hear about
it? Just hear about it, yeah.
So you weren't actually the man on the radio, but it came through the gun position radio. Yeah. What could you see of the gun position? Can you describe the scene then?
Well, the biggest thing I remember is that the Germans sent up like smoke flares. And when he looked out, you could see them coming round and round and round and round and round and round and round until they completely made a circle. Then you knew that was it. It's completely encircled.
Now, what were those smoke flares? Who would send them up? The Germans?
The Germans, yeah.
For what purpose?
To show that they'd, more or less, you know, their men were in position all the way round.
So it was their recognition signal?
Yeah, like an orange flare it was.
Orange or purple?
I thought, to me it looked like orange.
And overnight then, sorry, I'll step in a bit back. Overnight, what did you do? Did you get some sleep?
Very little, about an hour.
Was that because you were nervous or just because they were still firing?
They were still firing, yeah.
And next morning then, what do you remember, bit by bit through the day?
What, on the 6th?
That's the actual day of the final
battle. On the 6th, that was the day we actually were... Well, I saw these flares go up and...
Well, that was in the morning?
In the morning, yeah.
And how did you feel?
Well, I felt shattered. I thought, you know, it's almost as though we're in the bag. Because these...
Did you know you'd been ordered to fight to the last man in the last round, that sort of business?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So you might not just have been in the bag, you might have been dead.
Oh, yeah.
So how did you feel?
Well, how does a young man think that his life's going to finish there and then? I mean, you don't know how you feel. I mean, you're frightened, obviously, but I think overall, you've made a picture in your mind of the Germans, and he was sort of a big figure, about 9 foot tall, and sort of, he was the man, he was sort of, you know, I suppose like when people had heroes in the cinema, I think like, I used to think of the Germans as being invincible, you know, sort of 9 foot tall and really big and strong and swarthy, and I thought, well, if we're in the bag, that's it. And yet, when we finally got captured, and things changed altogether because
I'll come. Yeah, we'll go. Yeah. Now, you were sat there. Did you have anything to actually do during the morning? I mean, other.
Well, I was helping carry the wounded.
So you didn't have any quartermaster duties, you know? I mean, assistant, whatever.
They'd got their food on their own wagons, so they would help themselves.
So where would you get the wounded from?
Well, the people were scattered all over the place. I mean, I remember picking up one bloke, and he was like a rag doll, got no arms and no legs, and smoking on fire, and frightened me to death. And I went round and took him to the, it was like a setting. Well, this bloke called Paddy Miles, he was in this little dip, and he got wounded while he was being. Who like got wounded again while I was in the wounding section?
This is a regimental aid post.
Yeah, yeah.
That's where McFarlane and Harry Day.
Yeah,
there might have been some more there. Yeah. Did you know those two?
Oh yeah.
Day.
Yeah.
What did you think of them? I mean, were they doing a
good
job?
Harry. Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, under the circumstances, I mean, yeah, everybody did a good job because, I mean, it was you wouldn't believe it was chaotic. I mean, blokes were crying and you know, some were severely wounded and. Same as this bloke I saw with, how it all, almost like a rag doll. So no arms and no legs. And
they'd been blown off?
Yeah, yeah.
So he was just a torso?
Ooh, terrible.
Was there any point, was he still alive?
Yeah.
Mm. I mean, did you have stretcher bearers or stretchers? Or?
Well, obviously, I mean, the boy, I used to take my wagon, because I mean, got a quartermaster little wagon, put him on the back. Up and down there, back again. I was doing that for all day, so I mean, basically, I was doing something. And
you were acting as a medic?
Yeah.
Stretcher bearer, really. Yeah. Did your own wagon, wasn't that getting hit and with shrapnel and things?
Well, one or two wagons were being blown up, and I suppose, like everything else, I mean, you're either lucky or unlucky, you know.
So you weren't hit at all, your wagon?
No. 3 ton of the back of me was hit, and I was all right. So it just one of those things.
So you'd drive to where would you pick them up from? How would you know where to go? Would you just go to where the guns were?
Oh, just. Or people might say so and so's over there, or so and so's over there. Just go round and help out best you could.
Were there any particular people you remember helping? I mean, any individual gunners or officers?
No.
You didn't help any of the officers that got hit.
No.
So they were just You don't remember now who they were you helped?
Oh, no, I do.
Did you know them at the time? I presume you did.
Well, the people that...
I mean, would you recognise them?
Oh, no, no.
Were they all South Knots Hussars, or were there some of them other people?
Well, to be quite honest, I mean, in a battle like that, I mean, you sort of just did a thing and that was it. I mean, automatic, it picked somebody up and put them in a wagon and...
Was there anything else you could do for them? I mean, like the bloke who'd been really badly hit. Was there anything you could do?
Oh, no.
Did you have any water for them or anything?
No.
And no bandages or anything?
No.
So it was purely a matter of lifting them on?
Lifting them, put them on the wagon and that was it. Mm.
Did you have anyone to help you? Was there anyone else in your wagon giving you a hand lifting
them? No, just me. Yeah.
Mm. So it must have been quite painful for them to be got up on them.
Oh. Yeah, it brings back, to try and think about it, it's a bit,
So it was a horrible experience. We don't need upset.
No, not labour now. No, terrible.
And as the day went on, what was happening? I mean, how were they coping at regimental aid post? I mean, when you drove up, were they able to look after them when you got there? Or
well, I wouldn't stop long enough to find that out. I mean, just drop them in and say, you know, here's another one, and away you go. And they would continue from there, so...
And was there more shell fire? Some people have said there was even worse shell fire over the aid area, the regimental aid post area. They said it was very bad there. Was there a lot of shell fire?
Well, that's what I say. This bloke that was wounded, was carried there, he got wounded in there, in the actual...
Ron Miles?
Yeah.
Paddy Miles?
Paddy Miles,
so yeah. You rescued him, did you?
Yeah.
Where was he when he... Was he on his gun?
He'd be on his gun, yeah. And of course he got...
What was his first wound, do you remember?
I don't know, but I know the one in the post itself was through the neck, and he's still got to still has trouble with that neck, you know.
So you were doing that backwards. I mean, how many times would you be going backwards and forwards? So you got no idea.
Well, it was more or less all day, you know.
And how big an area was it? You weren't driving far, were you?
Oh no, probably in some cases probably 100 yards, some cases 200 yards, you know. But it was all sort of in the same area.
So what's the next thing that happened that you remember?
Well, the next thing was that the tanks had sent up this flare, and obviously they were a fair way away from us, like. But when they knew that they completely encircled us, and there's very little resistance from our lads, that they came quite close, like a bloody dog, you know, looking at its prey. And they came forward, and the next thing I saw was a Tiger tank almost, you know, looking down its barrel. And that's when I went on the old gun. There's a bloke called Tiny. He'd been hit, and...
Do you know his real name?
No, I did used to know his name, but everybody knew it was Tiny, so it was about 6'2", and... Tiny Williams, right? Williams, Tiny Williams.
Was he a gunner?
Yeah.
And which gun did you go on? Do you know which troop was it with? A troop?
I think it might have still been A troop, because... had been on the sort of left hand side of the, as you look at the battle, I mean, they were firing that way, so
A troop was on the left, was it, or yeah. E troop?
I'd be on the left,
and E troop was on the right,
yeah.
And how did you get on what made you decide to go on the gun? Were you told to go on the gun, or did you just decide?
That's when that Daniels told me to go on the gun.
So tell me exactly what happened then. So you were on your truck still?
Yeah.
So what happened then?
Well, I'd parked the truck in a bit further away from the line, because with the tanks coming through. And one of the blokes said, "Don't go near your truck, Al," because they'll blow it up. He said, "If you see you think you might be driving your truck away." So I kept away from the truck.
They were that close, the tanks?
Yeah, oh yeah. And I went up to this this gun, and that's when... Major Daniel says, "Get on that gun."
So you just went up to look at the gun, or were you going to go on it?
Well, I was going to find out the situation, because, I mean, some blokes had been killed and some blokes weren't there, and if you wanted any help, I mean, I was actually walking towards it before Daniel shouted at me, you see.
So your idea was, if they needed you, you would have helped anyway.
Oh, yeah, true.
Now, did you know who Daniel was?
No.
What did he look like? Just to check it is Daniel. Can you remember what he looked like?
I couldn't really say, because I mean, he was in a hole, and I was, you know, on the top.
He was in a hole?
Yeah. He was in a slit trench.
And what did he shout, exactly? Did he know your name?
Didn't know me. I didn't know him, so I mean, obviously.
So what did he shout first, then? Let's go back to that.
He just shouted at me, "Get on that gun!" Just like that.
Nothing else?
Yeah.
And what did you think, and what did you say?
What I said to him, I said, "Why don't you get on the bloody gun?" You know, 'cause I mean, to me, he was just a bloke shouted out of a hole. I mean, I didn't know who he was. He said, "I'm Major General." So I said, "I don't care about who you are." I said, "If you want a gun," I said, "Why don't you get on the gun?" I said, "You know, send him yours." So I thought, well, I better not, yeah, be too caustic. And so I said, "Righto, I'll go on the gun." And I went up.
Hang on. How did he react when you said that to him?
Well, I don't know, because, I mean, all I did then, I walked forward to the gun and started to...
So you said it, and then...
Walked away.
Then did what he said.
Yeah.
So although you were shouting at him, you actually did what he said, which is what you were already going to do anyway.
Yeah.
So you say you walked... Carry on. You walked to the gun.
Walked to the gun.
He didn't say anything else to you?
No.
Did you see him again?
No.
So you walked to the gun. Do you know which gun it was?
Well, I only know this bloke, Tiny Williams. He was a bloke on the gun. and he'd been injured. So
how? How had he been injured?
I think he got a bit of shrapnel in his shoulder. I mean,
his left shoulder.
And of course he was bending down, and he said, "You know anything about his gun?" So I said, "Well, a little bit." I said, "I've been with Pickle," and I said, "I've done a couple of bunk there." I said, "So," he said, "Well, go apart and see what you can do."
Now, how many other men was on that gun?
I would think about there was myself, the number one, and number two. That sort of one that side, one this side, and one on the trail.
And Williams was the number one.
No, I think he'd been doing number three. That's the layer.
Right. Mm. So the number one was already there, and you don't know who that number one was.
No, no, no.
So, what were you doing? What was your job of them three? You were on the trail, were you?
No, I was doing the picking up the ammo, putting it up the beach.
And what could you see in front of you?
I could see a big tank, which I knew later on was a Tiger tank, and an officer in the pulpit, as it was, you know, looking down and saying, you know. I heard him say, he said, "Gentlemen, for you the war is over." That's what he said to me. Not to me personally, but I mean, that's what he said to the sort of blokes who were around.
Now, can I just ask, so you never actually fired this gun again?
Oh, I did, yeah.
Before he said that?
No, after he said that.
Oh, I see. So yeah. He said for you. Now, how far away was he?
Well, judge, this is hard to judge, and I think 150 yards.
He shouted, and you heard him from
there? Yeah.
So he's shouting pretty loud.
Yeah, well, he's standing up in the air, don't forget. And, he's up here and you're down here.
So what about all the noise of the battle?
Well, a bit subsided a bit by then, because, I mean, back end of the time, it was nearer 4 o'clock than probably in the morning. In the morning time, you couldn't hear yourself talk.
So there was much. So you did hear him say that. But you didn't surrender?
No, no.
So tell me what happened next. You heard this. Were there any people round the tank? British prisoners?
Oh, no.
He was talking to you then?
Yeah, personally.
So what did you do then? What happened next?
Well, I bent down to pick up the next shell.
Had you already fired?
We'd fired before. I'd picked up the next shell to put in.
Now, the first shell, had that hit anything? Or where had you fired it? Where? Who had you fired it at? This chap in the tank?
Oh, no, anywhere. I mean, you know, just the only way. You see, if you fire at a tank, you've got to lower your gun and do all this sort of business. The gun that was then in its firing position to fire a long way.
So it wasn't in anti-tank position?
Oh, no.
So you weren't firing anything, really?
No, just getting off. I mean, in case you did damage somewhere else. I mean, not a tank itself. I mean, because on a tank, you've got to get down to tank position.
How come it wasn't in anti-tank position? Because I thought they'd been in anti-tank for quite a while. It just wasn't.
Well, not to my... I don't know much about guns, so I mean...
But you weren't firing at a tank, as far as you were concerned.
No. Right. I went to pick up a shell.
The second shell?
Yeah, the second shell. And the next thing I knew, my face was covered in blood. Because they'd fired at us. And I must have had a splint or something, but the next thing I knew, the face was covered in blood. Cause I heard a dick like that, and obviously you put your hand around your face, and of course you carry the blood over. And all down here, my jumper was covered in blood.
This is, you'd been nicked near the left eye?
That's right, yeah.
So it was your blood?
Yes, yeah, so I thought I'd had it.